I will call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for this February 25th and talk about a modest schedule change. The work session on House Bill 2691, the bill is not ready for prime time. Got amendments and things like that coming, so we are going to not open that bill, and we're not carry it over at this point. We'll bring it back with our 48-hour notice when it's ready to be worked. I will open up the first public hearing on House Bill 2896, and invite my esteemed colleague from the Deep South to kick it off. I think are we looking for Senator Johnson as well? Is that
Representative Johnson?
Rep Johnson. Good. When he comes, we'll let him join the party.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature. I'm bringing before you a bill this afternoon that was brought to my attention by Oregon Health and Science University. I'm going to introduce in a kind of personal way. Like many Oregonians, my family's been impacted by cancer. My mother died of brain cancer. My father died of liver cancer. My oldest brother died of lung cancer at age 41, even though he was not a smoker. And my wife is a survivor of breast cancer. I take cancer very, very seriously. When the leading expert on cancer in our state comes to us with a concern about tanning beds and the danger of skin cancer, I take that very seriously. The bill we're bringing before you today, the bill we're bringing before you today is very direct. It is basically going to ask the state to ban the use of tanning beds for people under the age of 18, similar to how we handle cigarettes in our state. When we look at cancer-causing agents, this bill is asking legislators to recognize that tanning beds are a proven cancer-causing danger for Oregonians, and therefore must be handled in such a way that we don't endanger anyone, preferably, but particularly young people who are susceptible to the lure of the product, and are not quite possibly aware of the dangers involved. So that is it in a nutshell, Mr. Chair. I'll turn over to Rep. Johnson to offer his presentation.
Why don't we ask Dr. Drucker to join you on this initial panel as well?
Thank you, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. For the record, Mark Johnson, State Representative for House District 52. Like most of you, I was shocked to learn about Oregon's high skin cancer rates. It is alarming that women in Oregon who are diagnosed with melanoma are more likely to die from it than any other state here than any other state in the country. While there are several reasons for Oregon's high incidence of skin cancer, we can lower the risks for our young people if we pass House Bill 2896. As you know, House Bill 2896 prohibits the use of indoor tanning devices by teenagers under 18 unless a doctor has prescribed it. According to a CDC report released in 2011, 21% of all high school girls report indoor tanning. Using a tanning bed is particularly dangerous for our young people. Research shows that people who begin indoor tanning before the age of 35 have a 75% higher risk of developing melanoma in their lifetime. While exposure to UV light is fairly consistent across age groups, research indicates that high-risk exposure happens more commonly in teens, and that overexposure during childhood greatly increases the chances of developing skin cancer later in life. I've learned that there is a safe alternative for those young teens who still desire the effects of tanning beds, what is known as spray tanning. And I was going to bring along Representative to use as a visual aid, Mr. Gilliam, but he wasn't available for this. But he had another commitment, I'm sorry. The chemical in spray tans has been approved by the FDA since the 1973 and is currently provided as an alternative by many tanning salons throughout the state. I think you may have before you a letter from a near constituent. This person actually lives in Rep. Huffman's district, but who talks about operating a salon that provides only this type of non-UV alternative spray tan. She feels very strongly about it, only offering this risk-free alternative. Unfortunately, she couldn't be here to testify today, but I encourage you to read the testimony that's been submitted. Currently, 36 other states have regulated the indoor tanning industry. California, Vermont have passed similar legislation to House Bill 2896, and even Texas has banned use of indoor tanning devices for children. So with such staggeringly high skin cancer rates, we need to protect Oregon's minors and from this unnecessary cancer risk. So what I'd like to do now is actually introduce the person to my right who...
Somebody who knows something.
Absolutely.
Knows something. Who can speak from conviction and true experience. Dr. Drucker. Brian Drucker is the director of the Knight Cancer Center at Oregon Health Sciences University. I have a personal connection with Dr. Drucker. About 14 or 15 years ago, I have my wife and I have a very dear friend in Hood River who developed CML, chronic myelogenous leukemia. And he went through the traditional treatment regimen that you typically use to fight that, did not respond, and was doing very, very poorly. And by chance, his doctor heard about a trial program that OHSU was beginning, headed up by Dr. Drucker, and he was able to get into the original trial that led to the creation of the drug Gleevec, which, as we know, has become a world class drug that has saved the lives of hundreds, if not thousands, of Oregonians. And today, my friend is very much alive. He's the poster child for Gleevec, if you will, as the person who is most benefited from this drug. So with that, I'll turn it over to the good doctor. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick, member of the committee. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Dr. Brian Drucker. I'm the director of the OHSU Knight Cancer Institute. And as you've heard, I've devoted my career to improving cancer treatment. I'm here today to share my professional opinion and also to speak on behalf of OHSU about our mission to improve the health of all Oregonians. And we believe that House Bill 2896 is an important step forward. As you've heard, we've made important progress in the fight against cancer, but there's still much more work to be done. Even though some cancers are highly treatable, prevention still needs to be one of our top priorities. As you heard from Representative Johnson, I've been involved in the development of a better way to treat cancer with Gleevec, a once-a-day pill that has revolutionized the way we treat cancer. And you've also heard patients who were once given a death sentence are now alive today, leading normal lives. But even with this progress, it's critical that as a society we remain committed to doing everything possible to avoid the disease in the first place. House Bill 2896, as you know, restricts children younger than 18 from using indoor tanning devices unless a physician provides an exemption. Evidence continues to mount that we're not doing enough to protect young people from skin cancer. In the past three decades, more people have had all types of skin cancers than all other cancers combined. Further, the disease impacts Oregonian disproportionately. The melanoma death rate for women in Oregon is the highest in the country, and the state has the nation's fourth highest melanoma death rate overall. The human toll these statistics represent is deeply disturbing to me because skin cancer is highly preventable. We know that limiting exposure to ultraviolet light, especially in young people, is one of the ways to prevent the disease. I want to be very clear about this. The evidence is very clear. Tanning booths, like cigarettes, cause cancer, and they should be off limits to minors. The FDA categorizes tanning beds as a level one carcinogen, the same designation it gives to tobacco. That puts it in the same category as tobacco, arsenic, and mustard gas. And what many children and parents may not know is the risks with UV exposure are even higher for minors than for adults. As you've heard once, and I will repeat this, one study found that people who engage in indoor tanning before age 35 have a 75% higher risk of developing melanoma. The younger the exposure, the higher the risk. Discouraging sunbed use or requiring parental authorization is not effective in addressing this risk. Studies indicate that the use of tanning beds is as high as 40% among 16 to 18-year-olds and coincides with a recent rise in melanoma incidence among U.S. women. As part of today's testimony, you'll hear from a young woman who will share how she begged her parents to visit tanning salons because that's what her friends were doing. She never dreamed she'd end up with melanoma in her 20s. Tanning advocates will argue that certain types of UV devices, known as UVA, are less likely to cause skin cancer. Scientists do agree that UVA is less likely to cause skin burns, but they are still linked to malignant melanoma, damage to the immune system, and weakening the skin's tissue. Another argument is that low dose of UV can be administered in a controlled setting and is less damaging than sun exposure. To me, that argument is essentially like saying that smoking only a few cigarettes a day would be okay, or that using a low-tar nicotine substitute would be less harmful. The simple fact is that any exposure causes cancer, and we should do whatever we can do to protect the most susceptible individuals, our children. Tanning advocates will say there are health benefits from tanning. These include increasing vitamin D and the use in medical conditions such as psoriasis or eczema. We agree, there are potential health benefits. But in the case of vitamin D, there are safe alternatives that do not cause cancer. These include sources of vitamin D in foods such as dairy products, cereal, and fish, or nutritional supplements can be used. For psoriasis and eczema or other medical condition, this legislation does provide access to tanning booths, but only after the risks and benefits have been discussed with a physician, and only if it's been determined that other treatments are not likely to work or that the benefits of using a tanning booth outweigh the risks. Tanning beds should be used as a last resort for these conditions and under the direction of a physician who can appropriately weigh the pros and cons. Some may be concerned that this legislation will be bad for business. Again, as you've heard, there are safe alternatives to tanning booths. Most tanning salons offer somewhat more expensive spray tanning that uses a chemical that the FDA deems as safe and has been on the market since the 1970s. In fact, there are already several tanning salons in Oregon, one in Beaverton, one in Hood River, that exclusively use spray tanning methods. They've deliberately eliminated tanning booths due to their concern about cancer. So even within the tanning industry, there's a business model that can be successfully used. Lastly, some will say that we should leave this to parents. That would be great if it worked. But we already know that 40% of adolescent girls between 16 to 18 are using tanning beds. And we know that we have disproportionately high rates of skin cancer in this state. Today, minors in Oregon can access indoor tanning devices as long as they have a one-time parental consent. That child could be 11 or 17. And once they have that consent, there's no limit to how often they can engage in tanning. As a parent of a teenager, I know how persuasive, persistent, irrational, and risk-taking a teenager can be. But let's eliminate one more item from our discussion as parents and provide the same protection we do for smoking. Just as with tobacco, we don't say parental consent should override clear evidence of a cancer risk. I welcome your questions and ask for your support of this important legislation. It's my hope that our state will protect our children, we will save lives, lower the death rate from cancer, and that our example will inspire other states to do the same. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Drukers, I appreciated your visit with me. I guess I wanted you to explain a little bit about the frequency of this use. I was startled when we talked to find out how dangerous this is, first of all. And then if I remember your number, from 14 to 16-year-olds, they were averaging like those that did it 26 visits or 28 visits a year. And I thought that was an awful lot, and then I took a good hard look at my 16-year-old granddaughter and had a conniption. So
she looks too tan to you?
She looks way too tanned, and she's been doing that kind of stuff, you know, and Grandpa just kind of unloaded. It was obviously the wrong thing and good information, and I appreciate you bringing this up.
Thank you very much. We would agree with those statistics, although I would say it's typically 16 to 18-year-old where the use is the greatest.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes, please.
Thank you, colleagues, for bringing this to us, and thank you, Dr. Drucker. I've read lots about you, and it's a huge honor to have you here. We also
thank
have
you.
A connection, Dr. Brandon Hayes-Latin.
Yes, fabulous physician.
His daughter and my daughter have been best friends since 5-year-old. They're 16 years old. So I appreciate you bringing this to our attention, particularly because I've had squamous cell cancer. My mom died of squamous cell cancer. My brother and sister have had melanoma. And my huge passion is around prevention. So I really appreciate that you brought this to our attention. Are there other things that we're doing when I look at the tobacco, you know, prevention efforts that we do? Do we have warnings? What is the realm of what we could be doing, what other states are doing, taxing, labeling, the gamut?
There are certainly many, many things we could do. I would actually look to what Australia has done, where the skin cancer rates are astronomical. Mm-hmm. And what they've done, actually, is they have completely banned the use of UV tanning beds. They have done massive public service campaigns, education campaigns to look at use of sunscreen, hats, sunglasses, anything to protect from the damaging effects of UV exposure. We're taking one step because we believe that this is the first right step to take. But yes, there are many, many more things we can do in the prevention realm, and I do agree that that's the best way to approach this disease.
Thank you.
We have lots of other witnesses to go to.
Just a quick clarification. On the part on the physician's prescription here, I think tanning beds are already regulated on maximum times by state or federal. Does this allow a physician to write a prescription to exceed that time or whatever it turns out to be? I guess the question I'm asking is can a tanning salon honor a physician's prescription that changes what they're already allowed to do?
Representative Thompson, I actually don't know the specific answer to that question. The way that I understand the legislation is that if you have a conversation with a physician and obtain a prescription, that you are then would be allowed to use a tanning device. But I haven't seen anything specifically about how any additional regulation beyond that.
I'm kind of with you. I don't even know who regulates these tanning beds, but somebody at the state or federal must.
They are monitored and inspected. Right.
That would be a question to make sure that dovetails.
We're certainly happy to get you that information.
Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you, Chair.
I appreciate you coming down again.
Thank you, sir.
I'm going to call one more panel of positive, and then we have an opposition group. I'll call that as the third panel. So can I call Katie Wilkes, Dr. Pierce, and Dr. Hedberg?
So Chair Greenlick and other members of the committee, for the record, my name is Katie Wilkes and I live in Northwest Portland. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. The first time I used a tanning bed, I was 16 years old. Like most teenagers, I was very self-conscious about my appearance, especially after being teased as a kid for having ghostly white skin. At first, my mom refused to let me tan. She would say things like, "You're beautiful the way that you are," and tell me how tanning would make my skin look like leather by the time I was 30. But no matter what she said, I hated the way I felt when I looked in the mirror. So many other girls were tanning and then comparing their tan lines during lunch period at school. Why shouldn't I be able to do it too? After months of begging, my mom finally caved and I started visiting tanning salons with my friends. Many salons in Portland never even bothered to check my ID to see if I was underage, let alone keep track of how many minutes I spent in the beds, even though I had very pale skin. Tanning salons often promoted unlimited packages, which let me tan as many times as I wanted for a set monthly fee. I frequently purchased these because it was cheaper than buying individual tanning sessions. One summer, determined to get my money's worth, I went tanning every single day for 30 days. When I was 16, I was an honor roll student at St. Mary's Academy in downtown Portland. Oddly enough, that's part of what made tanning okay. It wasn't as bad as drinking or smoking. Even the good girls wanted to be tanned for senior portraits and prom. After high school, the tanning continued. I joined a sorority and made frequent trips to tanning salons with my sorority sisters. By the time I turned 18, I was tanning at least once a week, oftentimes more. I never imagined that I would be diagnosed with malignant melanoma, the most deadly type of skin cancer, at age 23. I found out on the third day of work at my first full-time job. Within days, I was referred to a surgical oncologist who made a 3-inch incision on the side of my right breast. I was so lucky to catch my melanoma before it spread, but that's what's so scary about melanoma. It's not just skin cancer. It's unpredictable, and it can transform from stage 1 to stage 4 in a heartbeat. What keeps me up at night is knowing that I could develop a second melanoma, and I might not be so lucky next time. At age 16, I thought I understood the risks of tanning, but who really thinks they're going to get skin cancer before starting their first real job? In reality, melanoma has become the most frequently diagnosed cancer for women my age, and it's not going to stop until we do what we can to protect the children from the dangers of UV and/or tanning. I know my mom regrets letting me tan, but how could she have known that tanning beds were so dangerous? Many of my friends' parents still think it's smart to get a base tan before going on vacation, or that you need to tan to get enough vitamin D. Just last year, a tanning salon employee in Portland told me that tanning beds are so high-tech these days that we don't have to worry about the quote-unquote C-word anymore. Well, if that were true, how do you explain the cancer that I developed on my chest, a part of my body that never saw sunlight but that was exposed to UV exposure in an indoor tanning bed multiple times? I think the worst part of all this is, if I had to do it all over again, I don't know if there's anything I could have done differently. Until our society starts to embrace pale skin as beautiful, there is nothing that will keep a 16-year-old out of a tanning bed short of a ban. By passing this bill, we have the power in Oregon to make a statement that tanning beds are dangerous and to curb the escalating rate of melanoma diagnosis in Oregon. I ask your support of House Bill 2896, and I thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman Greenlick. I'm Dr. Bud Pierce. I'm president of, and committee members, I'm Dr. Bud Pierce. I'm president of the Oregon Medical Association, 8,100 members, physicians, PAs, and students. And I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 2896. You're hearing lots of personal testimony here in Dr. Drucker's scientific background. Let me give you a few views from the trenches. I'm a practicing oncologist, have been here for about 20 years and started medical school 35 years ago. 20 years ago, melanoma, which is the most deadly form of skin cancer and the kind that I see in my practice, was a rarity in people 15 to 35. And just as this young woman next to me commented, I see the bad cases of melanoma, and I see bad cases of melanoma in 15 to 35-year-olds. And I see people that have had extensive surgery, and I present to them a year of difficult therapy. And then at the end of all that, when I'm sitting there with the 15-year-old and their parent or the 25-year-old and their spouse or the children, and I'm looking at them and I'm saying, well, we're in a good place. We're going to do monitoring. I actually know that they have about a 50-50 chance of surviving this and being alive in 10 years. So this is a serious life-threatening illness that occurs as a result of an exposure to a carcinogen. In addition to the FDA, the World Health Organization stated in 2009 that UVA radiation is a carcinogen and is viewed in that way. And so, again, this is really about protecting our children. And are we going to do it as a society? I think a lot of times we're a little confused about old-looking children that, you know, they are children, that they're somehow adults and they have adult judgment. Well, they don't. And for my own children, they're 26 and 24. There was a simple answer when they requested tanning when they were children. The answer was no. And it's not going to happen, so it didn't happen. And with a lot of encouragement and counseling and maybe listening to me about one or two things, they decided not to tan, which is a good thing. So again, this bill is an important first step in protecting our children from skin cancers. It needs to be adopted by the legislature. We need to protect children. We need to advocate for public health. And again, I'm ready to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Hedberg. From a public health perspective.
Yes, thank you. Chair Greenlick and members of the committee, I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the state epidemiologist.
Excuse me just a moment. When this panel is done, I'm going to open up a hearing on another bill so one of my colleagues could testify, and then we'll get back to this bill, so please go ahead.
Okay. So I'm the state epidemiologist with the Oregon Public Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm also here to testify in support of 2896, which would prevent persons yet less than age 18 from using commercial tanning beds. I think it's already been spoken about that tanning is really a carcinogen. It does cause cancer, and again, has been testified by previous folks. This is across the board, WHO, NIH, locally, that, you know, there have been a number of these organizations that that are acknowledging that tanning is dangerous. More people develop skin cancer than all other forms of cancer combined. I think a lot of times people think of skin cancer as being relatively benign, squamous or basal cell carcinomas that can be easily treated. However, melanoma really is a deadly cancer, and again, it's been testified already that not only is it a deadly form of cancer, Oregon has one of the highest rates. It's about 7th highest new cases of melanoma in the country, so we're 35% higher than the rest of the country. And again, has also been alluded to, we have the 4th highest death rate from melanomas. And I think the other thing that is really surprising about this is these skin cancers are increasing, so it's not something that's been static. The number of cases of cancer is going up, and particularly in the younger crowd. So again, most cancers increase with increasing age. That's certainly true of skin cancer as well, but the surprising thing is that we're seeing more of these in young people. The link between skin cancer and tanning in and of itself, the tanning beds, there have been numerous studies that show that there's a link there, and it gets worse if people are exposed not only overall how much they're exposed, but when they start being exposed at a younger age. So oftentimes there's a lag between when people are exposed to a carcinogen and when they develop cancer. Again, if people are starting to tan when they're younger, that lag time is short. So we do see people in their 20s and 30s at a relatively young age developing this kind of cancer. As has also been alluded to, this is unfortunately not a rare thing. In addition, I think some of the information reported earlier about how common it is, the Youth Behavior Risk Factor surveillance system that we look at says that at least 20% of girls use tanning beds on a regular basis. And then again, as it was reported already, the congressional investigation found that of girls aged 16 to 18, it may be as high as 40%. So again, very, very common. One of the things that I wanted to address a little bit when was asked about who is it who regulates tanning beds, that's us. So not me personally, but the Oregon Public Health Division, we have a radiation protection services, and through administrative rule, we are the ones who go out and look at commercial tanning beds and facilities. So we regulate over 500 of those tanning facilities and over 2,000 tanning beds in Oregon. They're expected every 3 years for compliance, and part of the compliance relates to assessing skin type of consumer, how frequently they have sessions that are scheduled, how long those last, whether operators have been trained, bed maintenance, sanitation, etc. So we do have some of the tools at hand, but then again, this particular bill, were it to be passed, would add yet more teeth, if you will, or something that our radiation protection services could help to regulate this this carcinogen. So in summary, the provisions of 2896 preventing persons under age 16 from tanning beds would enhance our ability to protect what really is a vulnerable population, our kids. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
That's true. Okay.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to go back to Katie for a second. Thank you for coming and telling, sharing your story. I'm sure that's not altogether easy. I guess the thing that's interesting to me is how popular this is. And you know, this bill is pretty specific. 16 to 18-year-olds can't do it unless they have permission. But how are these high school and college kids aware of how dangerous this is and just disregarding it, or are they uninformed, or kind of what do you think is the state of awareness?
I think that there's a little bit of both, and I've also done some reading that once you get to be a little bit older, you realize it's bad for you and you still do it, similar to people who use cigarettes. But when I was 16, I had no idea that melanoma was as dangerous as it was. By the time I was using tanning beds and I was 19, 20, 21, I think I realized, okay, this isn't the best thing for before me, but I never really put two and two together that it was something that could happen to me at such a young age. And so I think that, or that we always used to say that if you get skin cancer, at least it's just skin cancer. You can just cut it off, and it's no big deal.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really realize until I think I was diagnosed that this is something that if it had spread to my lymph nodes, I might not be here today. And that just the how serious that is, I think that people just don't realize that.
Yeah, thank you.
Ms. Chair, another question, too, if I might, to Dr. Helberg. I saw you nod when she mentioned most people don't realize how dangerous skin cancer is and apparently can't just cut it off. Can you speak a little bit to that, please?
So, Chair Greenlick and Representative Kennemer, not specifically, we haven't asked the question. We could collect some data on, for example, our behavior risk factor surveillance system, et cetera. But I do know that anecdotally, when people think, I mean, lots of us have been diagnosed, if not with skin cancer itself, but with a precancerous lesion, gets frozen off, people have these little. So it's relatively common, and I think because we see a fair amount of it around, people assume that it can be treated relatively easily. So I think that even the word skin cancer, people don't take it as seriously as they should, both for, again, squamous and basal cell carcinomas. I mean, the costs of having these treated, of course, is not insignificant, but then the melanomas, which, you know, it can spread much more, as has been talked about already, and is one of the deadliest cancers.
Brief questions and brief answers. We have a long agenda today.
Yeah, how does does exposure from tanning beds compare to exposure to the sun? Not that that's an option in Oregon, but presumably someone might have a pool they lay out next to 2 days a year. What's the, I guess the question I'm really asking is, if we do this, are we just going to take that same teenage population and put them out in the backyard in the sun for extended hours rather than, I don't know, however many minutes you're in a tanning bed, but some sort of minutes? Is one better than the other?
So, Chair Greenlick and Representative Thompson, I think one is not better than the other. And basically, it's both how much exposure, duration, intensity of exposure, how many days. What we would say is that even people who are out gardening, let's say, should be using sunscreen, should be using wearing sun glasses, wearing a sun hat, et cetera, long sleeves when possible to protect. I do actually think it's a fallacy in Oregon that because it's cloudy here that people don't get exposure to sun.
I was kidding.
In fact, I'm a native Oregonian.
I saw the sun once.
I certainly have moss around my ears, but you know, you can easily get a sunburn overcast, and if you're skiing or whatever, all the more so because you're getting reflected radiation. So I think one of the things to say is clearly, and I think it was alluded to earlier, doing one thing, banning tanning beds, is not the whole answer. There needs to be education. There needs to be more information about a variety this is a piece. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Just a quick question. Dr. Drucker had said 40% of the 16 to 18-year-old girls use tanning. Do you have any statistics on the 18 to 21-year-olds?
Representative Greenlick, Representative Kenny-Guire, we don't specifically have any question about that, although we could, again, add that to our behavior risk factor surveillance to find out the answer, but we do not have that specific number for you. Sorry.
Okay, thank you, guys. Thank you very much for coming to share your story.
Thank you.
I'm going to keep this hearing open, but I'm also going to open a hearing on House Bill 2678. For the purpose of having an opening statement from my colleague so she can talk to us and then go back to work, back to her real work.
Thank you. I consider this real work.
This is. Yeah. This
so
is.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Val Hoyle, I represent House District 14, West Eugene and Junction City. And good to be back in front of my old committee.
Anyway.
And I do want to say in relation to the last bill, my husband grew up in Africa with light skin, and he has had skin cancer, and for us and our family, this is a very serious issue, and I would I strongly support the previous bill. But I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about House Bill 2678, and it is a very simple change. Right now, in order to practice physical therapy, we allow you have to be licensed in state. and we allow out-of-state licensed physical therapists to provide services for a maximum of 60 days if the services being provided are for a touring theater company, a performing arts company, or an athletic team, because if a team is coming to Oregon to play, they bring their own physical therapists. These are professional athletes or elite athletes. In Eugene, we've seen a reason to expand this provision. As many of you know, Eugene is known as Tracktown USA. And a number of events that we have are Olympic level events. They're very elite athletes that are coming from all over the world, and they would like to bring their own physical therapists. So what we would like to do is in the Dash 1 amendments add the words athletic organizations, so that athletes that play in non-team sports, for instance track athletes, could then bring their own physical therapists. At our pre-Olympic event, brought over 21,000 spectators and over 1,000 athletes to Oregon, and we would like to afford them the same consideration to bring their physical therapists that we afford to other elite athletes, because we'd like them to come to Oregon.
Makes sense.
Any questions? Well, we have no other witnesses, but we also don't have a fiscal. So we'll close the public hearing and carry this
all right,
bill over.
Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. We'll carry this bill over to the whip.
Thank you, and we miss you on the committee.
We'll carry this bill over to Wednesday, you think, and see if we get a fiscal so that we'll be able to work it on Wednesday.
I'll go do that right now.
Not a bad idea. Can I get you to help one of mine, too? We are still in the hearing for House Bill 2896, and I'd like to call Joseph Levy and Mandy Hendrickson, yes. Sorry, you got lost in the bottom there.
And then
I think we have, following this, only one other witness. Is that right? Two other witnesses. Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Joseph Levy. I'm the scientific advisor to the American Sun Tanning Association and executive director of International Smart Tan Network, which is the educational institute for professional tanning facilities in the United States and Canada. For 21 years, it's been my role to develop UV training materials for thousands of professional sunbed centers, including the state-approved course here in the state of Oregon under state regulations that are in place in Oregon. Melanoma researcher and professor of dermatology, Dr. Jonathan Reese, once said that melanoma is an example of politics and science becoming mistakenly intertwined, that an amicable separation is required. You heard it said here in support of this bill, quote, "The simple fact is that any exposure causes cancer." And that's what Reese was talking about. That's because melanoma is more common in indoor workers than it is in outdoor workers, and it's most common on parts of the body that do not get regular UV exposure. And it is much more common in men than it is in women, and the mortality rates are increasing much faster in men than they are in women. It does not have a straightforward relationship with UV light. That would be impossible. Indoor workers get 3 to 9 times less UV than outdoor workers, but they get more melanomas. The proponents of that bill have not acknowledged that very important caveat. It is not disputed. The World Health Organization recognizes it. They haven't presented that to you. That's part of the problem. That's why research dermatologist Dr. Bernard Ackerman, who founded the field of pathology in dermatology, the field of dermatopathology, he's trained more dermatopathologists than anyone on the planet, said in his book, quote, "Paradoxically, business is sometimes more academic than academia, that Smart Tan got it. But the Skin Cancer Foundation, like the American Cancer Society, the American Academy of Dermatology, does not get it." Ackerman promoted sunburn prevention and not sun avoidance and not overzealous sun phobia. Okay? And he's not affiliated with any industry. In fact, he was very critical of the dermatology profession being very closely aligned and accepting so much money from the manufacturers of chemical sunscreen products. That's why Dr. Sam Schuster, who's a British professor of dermatology, wrote, quote, that if you think a tan is damaged, tell that to Charles Darwin. A tan is an evolutionary device that the body is intended to do. Calling it damage would be like calling exercise damage to your muscles. It's a micro definition of a macro phenomenon. Your body is designed to get UV light. That's why melanoma researcher Dr. Arthur Rhodes from Rush University Medical Center in Chicago wrote in the Mayo Clinic Procedures in an essay called Melanoma's Public Message. Rhodes had a colleague who was a doctor, whose wife was a doctor, and the colleague had a lesion on his back and figured that since he never went outdoors and he never took his shirt off and never tanned, that the lesion could not possibly be troublesome. And his wife, who was a doctor, concurred. The lesion was a melanoma. The man died of the melanoma. And Rhodes' point is the sun causes melanoma message is doing more harm than it is good. It's oversimplifying a complex relationship that we need to take very seriously. We need to teach sunburn prevention. But the biggest risk factors for melanoma, bar none, are heredity, red hair, and a high number of moles. If you have a high number of moles, it is a much larger increase in risk than anything that is UV-related, and heredity and red hair are the biggest risk factors. That's what Rhodes' point was. In other words, it isn't straightforward. To say that sunlight is harmful and should be avoided is like saying that water causes drowning and therefore we should avoid water. Professional sunbed salons are perfectly willing to teach that balanced message, and we do that in Oregon. Proponents of the bill have misled you about the word carcinogen. We heard UV called a carcinogen like tobacco, asbestos, arsenic, I believe were the three that were used here, that it's in the same category. As somebody who's spent most of my adult life as an anti-tobacco advocate, I take personal offense to that. If you tell a teenager that sun, an essential element of life, is just as dangerous as tobacco, you are cheapening anti-tobacco movements that are so important. 18% of deaths in this country are related to tobacco. 1 in 3 cancer deaths are tobacco-related. The number of melanoma deaths, in comparison, is something like 0.3% of all mortality. It is a small fraction. And among carcinogens, there are other things in that same category. Red wine is a level 1 carcinogen. Salted fish is a level 1 carcinogen. Birth control pills are a level 1 carcinogen in the same category. And yet, the proponents of this bill only use tobacco, alcohol, and arsenic. Again, it's politics more than it is science. Very important caveat, and I don't want to waste your time, but I'm getting through this very quickly, that our proponents of the bill have failed to disclose. You heard it said that sunbed users who start tanning before age 35 had a 75% increased risk of melanoma. That isn't actually accurate. The World Health Organization study they're referring to doesn't study tanning salons. It studies sunbeds. And there are three types of sunbeds. There are sunbeds that dermatologists use to treat cosmetic skin conditions like psoriasis. There are home units that are used without supervision. And in Europe, many of the units are used in unsupervised settings. And there are professional tanning salons. That statistic, that 75% stat, comes from a data set that is half medical units and home units. And if you separate out those figures from the full data set, and I believe I've provided this to you, or if I haven't, I will leave it behind. The salons did not increase risk in a statistically significant fashion. The dermatology units nearly doubled risk. It was a 96% increase in risk, and the home units were a 40% increase in risk. Again, this is not a straightforward UV relation. When you deliver this in a non-burning fashion, the risk is not statistically different. Dr. Ivan Oransky, the editor of Reuters Health, and the treasurer of the Association of Healthcare Journalists, wrote an essay that I provided to you about the absolute risk of melanoma versus the relative risk. And in that WHO study, they went through and looked at the actual data. The risk for a sunbed user in that study for melanoma was 3 in 1,000. The risk for a non-sunbed user was 2 in 1,000. In other words, the difference was 1 in 1,000 difference.
Or a 50% increase, is that?
1 out of 1,000 was the difference.
Yeah, a 50% increase in risk, is that what you just said?
And he's saying, yes, he's saying the difference between absolute risk and relative risk is very important because it's a very small difference in increase. That included people with skin type 1 who we don't tan in the United States. Skin type 1 is the fairest skin type. We have a skin typing system, and I'll leave that behind here for you because we use it in the state of Oregon. It's called the Fitzpatrick Skin Typing System, and my organization worked with Dr. Thomas Fitzpatrick, the dermatologist at Harvard University, to develop a system to identify a person's skin type so that we can gradually acclimate their exposure based on Oregon regulations, based on their skin type. We don't tan type 1s in the United States. They tan in Europe because tanning in Europe is a therapeutic activity. It is not regulated the way it is here in the U.S. We have the most conservative exposure schedules in the world in the United States. So proponents of the bill have not put that in the proper perspective. That becomes even more significant when you consider the fact that dermatology phototherapy, which you heard dermatologists use sunbeds to treat psoriasis, and we have about 1.5 million customers who come to salons, follow our cosmetic procedure to treat psoriasis informally because it's less expensive than the copay for dermatology phototherapy with the same type of sunbed in their office. You heard it said by the doctor here that that's a last resort treatment. The National Psoriasis Foundation and the American Academy of Dermatology have introduced legislation calling phototherapy a safe, effective, and commonly prescribed first-line treatment for psoriasis. They introduced legislation in Illinois last year to mandate that insurance companies not be able to charge a copay for phototherapy using a sunbed in their office for a $100 to $150 session because the copay is more expensive than the tanning salon visit. In the early 1990s, there were nearly 1 million, I think it was 875,000 actually, phototherapy sessions that were delivered in the United States. And over the course of 5 years, dermatology lost 95% of that business, despite continuing to say that it's a safe procedure, because people figured out, wait a minute, why am I paying $50 a session plus paying for a drug for something I can go to a sunbed salon and self-treat? And so there are many people who follow cosmetic procedure to self-treat psoriasis. They're calling it safe when they do it. It's a level one carcinogen. In fact, the government's carcinogen listing for psoriasis phototherapy says that that increases risk of skin cancer up to 5,000%. Or in other words, 66 times greater increase in risk than what they've alleged we cause. They're calling that safe. Okay, and it's a level one carcinogen according to the National Institutes of Health carcinogen report. Again, I'm not saying that that's an unsafe procedure or that they shouldn't do that. I'm saying this is a much more complicated issue than simply saying any sun is damage. Again, to say any sun is damage is like saying water causes drowning and therefore you shouldn't drink water. So professional salons in the United States are trained to use the FDA-created exposure schedule, the most conservative schedule in the world, to gradually induce a suntan while minimizing the risk of sunburn. The unintended consequence of this legislation would be that teenagers would be able to use home units and would use home units that are widely available. If you check Craigslist or eBay, go and look right now, because there are so many tanning facilities because of the 10% tax on tanning salons that was introduced last year, the federal tax, that have closed. There's a flood of used equipment on the market right now, and it's showing up in basements and garages, and you're going to drive this into an unregulated market. You're going to create another problem. We've done research on this and done surveys on this, and we know that 3 out of 4 teens, if they did not have the option to tan with their parents' consent in a professional salon, would tan more aggressively outdoors or would use these home units. So in conclusion, I know I've been speaking very fast here. I'm trying to be respectful for your time. We're here to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. The proponents of this bill have been introducing this concept for years now, have never once reached out to us to see what we could do together, to do cooperatively, and we are open to that. We would be happy to do that. And again, I'm pointing out here that I think overstating the risks of sun, which is as a carcinogen, is the only one that you need in order to live. It's distinct among the list of carcinogens. We would all be dead without ultraviolet light. We need it. To characterize it as tobacco and asbestos and alcohol, I just find personally offensive, overstatement, politics, and science becoming tragically intertwined. So I ask you to reject this bill and encourage you to encourage the sponsors to meet with us, to see what we could do together, to end this silly bickering, to end this noise, because there is a big chasm between what they say the science says and what it actually does say. So I'm delighted to answer any of your questions. Thank you very much.
Let's hear from Ms. Hendrickson, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. My name is Mandy Hendrickson, and I want to thank the chair and the committee for their time, and I will speak quickly as well to get through this. I'm the area manager and director of operations for Palm Beach Tan franchise. It operates salons in both here in Portland and then in Oregon, as well as in Vancouver, Washington. And again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today regarding this issue. As a member of Smart Tan and a Smart Tan instructor myself, we've always prided ourselves on the superior level of professionalism in which we conduct ourselves, from the cleanliness of our salons to skin typing our clients to restricting their exposure time to negate the risk of overexposure and to requiring those clients that we have under 18 for parental consent, consent that must be given in person in our salon. Contrary to what some media has stated, our industry actually supports regulations, and we support and enforce the current Oregon state regulations very well. These regulations increase professionalism, cleanliness, and most importantly, public safety. Not that the bill currently on the table does nothing more than feed that ongoing fear surrounding indoor tanning. There's misleading statistics, it's sensationalism, and they have a ripple effect on our business for those that are over 18 as well. So many prominent independent dermatology industry leaders actually support our position that sunburn prevention, not sun avoidance, is what we should be teaching. But I also want to speak to you as a parent of three teenagers. And interestingly enough, two of them have very different sun stories. One of them is actually skin type 1, and I would night tan her. She's 16 years old. My son is 17, and he actually is not ever interested in tanning. It's not very something very social that boys are really into as a junior in high school. But he has a severe vitamin D deficiency, so his dermatologist actually prescribed indoor tanning for him in order to treat this. So I'm incensed and insulted that my rights as a parent to make decisions about activities in which my children partake is being taken away from me. My children's well-being, both now and in the future, is of the utmost importance to me. I'm a well-informed individual, and I weigh the risks and benefits in all decisions I make for my kids. I weighed that risk when I decided whether or not to immunize them, whether or not to take them swimming, when I drop them off at school, when I put them on a school bus, and I trust that I've taught them well to cross the road safely by looking both ways first, and the state trusts that I can confidently make decisions regarding my kids' UV exposure for the 3 to 6 months, and 6 months is being fairly optimistic, of the year that the sun actually shines here in Oregon. I support our current regulation that requires parental consent for those under 18 to tan indoors. That gives me and other parents the right to weigh the risks associated with UV exposure, the opportunity to educate my children, and the right to make a choice. I want to educate our youth, not ban them and terrify them about sun exposure. It is far more important in my eyes to create a comprehensive educational campaign that would teach youth how to responsibly take part in activity that they're going to do indoors or out, regardless of whether you ban them. Sunshine outdoors is free, unlimited, and uncontrolled. There's no timer there, no person who's trained to tell them when to turn it away. When I send my child to a track meet, his track coach isn't required to make him wear an SPF and make him go inside and wear a sun hat and long sleeves. I just have to send him and trust that I have educated him well and told him how to limit his risk completely. As an operator of a tanning salon, if this bill passes, I'm a little concerned about the regulatory requirements of this bill. Our current state regulations dictate that as a trained tanning salon operators, we skin type our customers. We then use the skin type to follow the equipment manufacturer's duration and frequency of sessions required by each piece of equipment. Would that physician's prescription override this? And how do I manage and regulate parental consent and physician's consent for those who are under 18? My other concern is we have salons in Vancouver, Washington, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump over the river for most of these teens. How many of these teens that we ban that are under 18 will either go to a basement, go outside for a long period of time because they are determined to get a tan, or just drive across the river and tan in an unregulated state that has quite a lot of tanning salons that would be more than willing to tan them without parental consent? Again, I thank you for your time, and I hope this committee directs its bill sponsors to reach out to work with us on better legislation that the industry can support so we can all work together on real-world skin care and skin education for teenagers. Thank you for your time.
Yes. So, and I appreciate your testimony. The part that I don't understand clearly, so you had the skin types, and that determines how many sessions they can be and those kind of things, but what prevents them from just going from one salon to the other, or one tanning area to the other, regardless of that, and overextending the person wouldn't know in the business?
So were you asking if they were to go from one chain to, say, another, a different man?
Sure.
So we're all trained, and state of Oregon regulations require that we're trained to ask if they've tanned frequently, to look at their skin. You can generally tell if someone's tanned frequently, but that's one of the questions in Skype skin typing. Have you tanned recently? How frequently do you tan? What's the duration of your visits? And use that as part of our skin typing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I missed the beginning of your introduction. Are you from Oregon? Or are you a national
rep? I'm the National Association. I'm based in Colorado.
Okay, great. So can you tell us what some other states might do around regulation, around making sure there's, because your point is more overexposure. What are some of the other, and in Oregon compared to other places, what are some of the ways that we prevent, you said no one from skin type 1 can get tanned, but what are some of the ways that we restrict exposure among minors?
Thank you for your question. I've been developing the training materials for the market for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
21 years ago, I had assumed, and we were working with states, that every state would have a regulatory program to regulate and underscore the protocol that we believe in. Oregon is one of the states that has done that and has done that comprehensively. The operators here are required to be trained and pass a formal training course that I create. And so the safeguards here to make sure that the standards are being enforced, to make sure that the exposure schedule is delivered correctly, supersede most of the rest of the nation. About half of the states have developed programs. The programs don't pay for themselves. And so many of the states have stopped. You know, it was attractive legislation in the 90s, but the health department started saying, you know, we've got bigger priorities and bigger fish to fry. Mm-hmm. We don't want what you just handed us. And so in about 1992, I had assumed that every state would have regulatory programs, but by the mid-90s, you could see that wasn't going to happen. And so the market has embraced a spirit of self-regulation nationwide to emulate the standards that are in place here in Oregon through the rules that are in place here.
Ms. Levy, I'd like to ask you a question. I was dazzled by your statistical acumen. It sort of reminded me of a book I read when I was studying statistics that, if I remember correctly, was called Figures Don't Lie, But Liars Figure. It was an explanation on how to manipulate data in the way I just heard you manipulate it. I think I heard you say that since water is safe, you can't drown. And that's really the issue here. But I just want to ask you a very simple question. Are you asserting on behalf of the industry, and would you be willing to assert in court, that suntanning is perfectly safe for people 16 to 18? I mean, that's the bottom line. So I want to know if it's your industry's position, and if you're willing to defend it against suits from young women who've been exposed to it and end up with melanoma. Are you saying suntanning is perfectly safe for women 16 to 18? That's the question.
Thank you for your question, and I appreciate the seriousness of your question, and I guess if I were in your position and you were hearing so much of this for the first time, I can understand why you would ask that question. The name of my organization is International Smart Tan Network. That name is very pointed. We want people to be smart about their exposure.
I've asked you a simple question.
Yes.
The question is, are you asserting on behalf of the industry, an assertion you're willing to take to court in a lawsuit, that tanning is safe for women 16 to 18? That's a simple question.
The answer is, we promote it as smart. We don't use the word safe, because safe implies something is you can do something recklessly and abuse it and not be harmed. And we don't want people to do that. We want people to think about their exposure. I am saying that there is no such thing as safe the way you are choosing to define it when you're talking about...
I'm choosing to define it in a simple way. Doing this causes melanoma. Now the question is, are you asserting on behalf of your industry that tanning does not cause melanoma, or that tanning, a 16-year-old tanning, is perfectly safe? That's a simple question. It has a yes and a no answer.
I am saying that UV exposure is natural and intended, and we are a surrogate for what is natural and intended. And the best that any individual can do is minimize risk. And what does minimize risk mean? Nobody knows the answer to that question, but it isn't zero exposure. Zero exposure does not equate to zero risk. There are risks to underexposure, just as we believe and we teach there are risks to overexposure. Now, I teach and use sunscreen effectively outdoors. What I'm talking about here is the fact that sunscreen As a product, a sunscreen manufacturer cannot advertise that its product prevents skin cancer because most of the research shows that people who use it have higher rates. I'm not saying that it causes skin cancer. I'm just saying the research doesn't...
Can I just take it to say that you're not willing to say it's safe?
I'm saying we don't use the word safe because we teach smart. The relationship I said is that to say that this is dangerous and should be avoided is like saying that water causes drowning and therefore you should avoid water. That is a misrepresentation of an intended relationship. Humans are supposed to get UV exposure. We get less of it right now than any point in human history.
So the answer is you are not willing to say tanning is safe for a 16-year-old.
It is an FDA requirement that we not use the word safe. And we don't want to use the word safe because we don't want people to believe that you can do this recklessly and abuse it. That is not what we teach. We teach smart tanning. That's not an evasive answer. That is
complex. Yes, it is an evasive
Absolutely
answer.
Absolutely not, Mr. Chair. That is attempting to say this is a much more complex issue than just saying avoiding the sun will lower my risk. People who work indoors have the highest rates of melanoma. How can you explain that if the relationship with UV is straightforward? Can you?
Figures don't lie. You're absolutely right. Any other question?
I have a question down there.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To be honest, before you started talking, I was fairly skeptical of this bill, but I'm stunned that you would refer to playing politics to the director of our Cancer Institute and the president of our medical association. What would they possibly have to gain by coming up here and giving their scientific opinion about the risks?
I am concerned that 21 years in the market, and I've never been approach as the Educational Institute, the visible Educational Institute, never been approached to look at common ground, to look at this practically, to look at skincare practically. You heard their testimony was that any exposure increases risk, and that is not supported by the science. It is not the World Health Organization's position. The statement, the World Health Organization is dealing with sunbeds in an unregulated market in Europe, where it is generally not, doesn't have a trained attendant like we do in the United States. The figures do not implicate or do not apply to what we do in the United States. And that is what I'm saying. And I would be happy, I know that this setting isn't conducive to a higher level discussion, but I'm perfectly willing to sit down and have a higher level discussion because it is not as straightforward as has been presented to you. And that is my answer to your question.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
You've got another question,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you do me the favor, as a former researcher who is somewhat wed to statistics and data, would you do me a favor and provide us, committee, with the sources on the statistics that you cite, please?
I would be happy to do so. And I apologize the very quick nature in which this bill came to the committee from being introduced. We don't have professional counsel at this point in the state of Oregon, so I didn't have an opportunity to get all of this material to you ahead of time. But I will get that to you. Thank you.
Thank you. We have two more witnesses on this bill. Mark Williams and Bridget Thomas.
Is that right?
That was you.
Really
is going on.
Yeah,
it was such a
hot topic. So no. I thought it was a slight bit.
Chairman Grelick and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Williams, and I live in Canby. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 2896 because I'm a 5.5-year survivor of stage 4 metastatic melanoma. I don't want to keep seeing young people diagnosed with melanoma, and if I may, let me tell you a little bit about my story. I literally woke up one day, felt a lump on my neck, and within 2 weeks after a biopsy and PET scan was told I had 14 tumors. I had 9 on my lungs, a large 9-centimeter by 9-centimeter my esophagus, 4 in my chest cavity. I never felt a thing, and I was told I had 6 to 12 months to live. Devastating news. I was in shock, anger. One moment I'm feeling fine, and the next, the doctors are telling me I have a year to live. I quickly go online and see the statistics for metastatic melanoma, and it's very, very devastating. I was blessed to respond to immunotherapy at Portland Providence Cancer Center. Only 5 to 8% of the people who do this live as long as I have. Feeling blessed, I wanted to help people, so I told the hospital that I would mentor patients. I'm happy to say I've met many wonderful people in the fight, many in Oregon, some old, some in their 40s and 50s, and some in their 20s and younger. We always get around to asking how they were diagnosed and where the melanoma was. Most of the older ones always say too much UV exposure, not enough sunscreen, and too many burns. But the younger ones, the 20-somethings, had a startling theme. They often used tanning beds. In fact, it is that part why I wanted to come and testify today. I personally have known a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old who've both died of metastatic melanoma. We will never know exactly why they developed melanoma so young, but I felt compelled to share that they believed frequently using tanning beds contributed to their cancer diagnosis. Children often start using tanning beds in high school or younger with the belief that either it makes them look better, it is healthy to get a tan, or I need a base tan for this summer because it protects me from damage. All of these are false. You see, the skin doesn't forget. And so when you damage your skin, it doesn't heal itself. That damage stays there. We realize that our skin underneath the surface is being damaged and doesn't repair. It just keeps building damage. This is what happened to me. I never had a mole, just too much damage to my skin underneath. Tanning beds cause this damage, breaking your DNA and causing mutations that may eventually cause cancer. This is why so many doctors, health organizations, even countries are raising a red flag about tanning beds. Tanning beds are known carcinogenic and cause cancer. It is that simple. This legislation is targeted at protecting children from that risk. By treating tanning beds like cigarettes, whereas if you're under 18, you shouldn't be allowed to use them. It will also raise the awareness of the growing epidemic. Melanoma is the most common cancer killer of young women. Supporting this bill is one of the ways we can take a positive step toward this epidemic and protect our young people from melanoma. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bridget Thomas. I'm from Estacada, Oregon. I started tanning when I was 15. We snuck into a friend of mine's parents. They had they were personal trainers, had a tanning bed in there. Nothing to wear the goggles. In the middle of the night, I woke up with second-degree burns on my eyes. I didn't learn from that. I continued to tan. At 16, I worked at a tanning salon. We are to be certified tanning instructors, no matter what age you are. Certified tanning instructor lets you go through the form that you fill out to see if they're fair, medium, dark skin, and regulate their minutes. We did not go by those rules at 16 years old. We did not do any of the rules. We're 16-year-old kids having our friends come in and occasionally tan for free. At 23, I moved to Portland. I opened up a tanning salon with 16 tanning beds. Majority of my receptionists were between the ages of 21 to 15 or 16 for after-school jobs or summer jobs. You can meter the beds to regulate how many minutes a person goes tanning, and I knew that these girls were letting their friends come in for free with no parental consent. I, as a salon owner, took that seriously and would have the parental consent. There may have been some that look over 18 that I did let go through. I'm not saying that every one that came in that looked under 18 or even 21, I ID'd them and got a parental consent. I have had 11 surgeries, 3 surgeries this month of cutting skin cancer out. It's scary. I have one more surgery in 2 months. I had started tanning at the age of 15. These skin cancers did not come up until 25 or 30 years later. I had no idea. Blonde hair, green eyes. You have the scare tactic of people saying you'll get skin cancer, don't tan. It'll never happen to me. It'll never happen to me. It didn't happen the first year, the first 5 years, 10 years. 25, 30 years later, here I am, having to go up and scars down my chest, on my back, on the side of my stomach. It is not worth it. It needs to be regulated. If you go with the Safe Tan, the Smart Tan, as a certified tanning instructor, people do not take that seriously. 5 years ago, I went to a tanning salon before I went to Tahoe. Went into a tanning bed. They asked if I wanted the maximum time. I said yes, which was 10 minutes in a high-pressure tanning bed. We drove to Tahoe. In the middle of the night, I woke up and had third-degree burns all over my body because they were brand-new bulbs in that tanning bed, and they did not advise me of that. Went to urgent care. And was a blister. I've had to have blue light therapy, which is a mild acid on my face, to try
and
take the skin
cancer
out of my face. Yes, sir.
He was just asking you to wrap up.
I just asked you to wrap up.
Oh, okay. I'm done.
Okay.
I could go on. I could go on.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much,
Chairman.
Just a question. Mr. Williams, you didn't indicate a source of your cancer, specifically if I was listening carefully.
They never did find a source. I did not use tanning beds. I'll make clear of that.
Okay.
But the main thing is I mentor a lot of patients.
Yeah. And you're seeing the trends, and I appreciate
yes.
that. Thank you very
exactly.
much. Thank you for coming.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill. Which one? Where are we? House Bill 2896. My intention, we're going to carry over to Wednesday. It'll be the first, a work session will be the first item of business on Wednesday's agenda to give you all a chance to think about this. And it would be my intention to move the bill on Wednesday. Thank you very much for coming.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
There had been a request from gentleman who spoke on behalf of the tanning salons to talk with some of these people. Do you see that as a valuable experience? I guess I think there's serious problems, but I also
I'm not
think,
sure what to say is the question.
Well, I'm not sure either. That's why I wondered about it.
Maybe you could talk out there.
Maybe they could start here. I guess I would like to ask that you at least make an effort to talk. I don't like it when people say very different things. And,
me too. I'd like to comment, we're not going to get to House Bill 2093 today, but I've heard some significant, is there somebody from the public health, who's going to testify on that today? I've heard discussions both from the State Secretary of State's office that has some significant problems with it and from the funeral folks, and I don't know who else. Would it be possible for you to try and track down? I'll be glad to help you.
Sure, I'd be happy to represent
track
you. Jennifer
down.
Woodward from the State Vital Records Office. Did you? We've talked to the State Archivist. Did you mention the Oregon Funeral Directors Association?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They both have some suggestions or some concerns. So we won't deal with that today, but this is an important bill, and I'd like to make sure we get it perfected.
I'd be happy to talk with them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a bill we can actually work today. So why don't I open up a public hearing on House Bill 2684. Who we got? We have one panel. Susan somebody?
Bamberger.
All right. And then somebody whose name I don't have a slightest clue. It's a bunch of scrawls. And then somebody, Olinga, who I do know.
The one you can't read is Ricky.
Who's the middle one?
Ricky Susick.
You know me.
Oh, hi, Ricky.
Hi. I thought I had good penmanship.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's just not readable.
What?
Go for it, guys.
Okay. I guess I'll start. Representative Greenlick, Chair, and Committee. We've been at this many times over the years. And
please identify yourself, Ricky.
Oh, Ricky Sussick, and I'm representing the Oregon Physical Therapy Association. And I've talked to the Healthcare Committee several times over the years regarding physical therapists. And, you know, historically, and I'll do my part quickly, is that in 1993, we gained direct access with a lot of restrictions, which means that as a patient, you could come and see a physical therapist without a doctor's referral. And over the years, people worried about it. And over the years, there haven't been a lot of problems with it. And so each time we kind of pick at it, it went down to, it was 30 days, then it went to 60 days. And a lot more of what we do is direct access. Very few of our patients are seen over 60 days, but it is a problem for those that need to be seen over 60 days because they have to go back to a doctor, sort of whether they need it or not. And at this point in time, we would like to get rid of that arbitrary 60-day limit on direct access treatment for physical therapists.
And it's my understanding that we have no opposition to this bill. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Inga can tell us that, too.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman Greenlick and the members of the committee. My name is Susan Bamberger, and I'm a physical therapist in a small private practice clinic in Wilsonville. I've been a therapist for about 13 years, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of House Bill 2684. In my practice, a small percentage of our patients are seen directly without a referral. Our patients know when they come to us if we can't help them. We'll know very quickly, oftentimes within a couple weeks, and we'll send them back to their primary care physician. The 60-day statutory limit is an arbitrary number. It does not serve any legitimate medical purpose. Physical therapists are in the best position to know if an issue is truly one best suited for physical therapy or not. We don't work in isolation. We work as a team with other providers. As required by law and our professional ethics, do not hesitate to refer patients to another provider if they're not improving. Only a very small percentage of people require physical therapy services beyond 60 days. These people may become limited in their treatment due to this arbitrary rule, resulting in unnecessary increased healthcare costs. Those that do, at least in my practice, the ones that are seen past 60 days are those with chronic health issues who've typically been to a lot of other practitioners and are making some improvements. I'll typically see them for maybe 1 to 2 visits over the course of a month. They're making progress, they're compliant with their program, and then I'm updating their program every 2 to 3 weeks. And given their condition, that can take several months to really get them back to where they need. Hold on a second. If I have to send them back after 60 days, whether they're making progress or not, it just seems it seems kind of pointless. It can be limiting for them in terms of the care that they receive from me, and it's also, again, just an increase in healthcare dollars. So, evidence shows that patient direct access to physical therapy services does not increase cost or put patient safety at risk. Some people may be concerned about overutilization issues. A 2011 study analyzed more than 67,000 patients in 2 states that allow direct access. They determined that costs and utilization of PT services are actually lower in a direct access environment, where PTs are able to prescribe the most appropriate level of care for the patients, which is often less than that prescribed by other providers. The concern of overutilization just hasn't been realized in 17 states that have complete direct access to physical therapy. The health provider service organization, which is my liability insurance carrier and the largest one in the industry, states that they don't use direct access as a factor in underwriting, nor do they charge a fee differential and premiums for those that provide direct access services, reflecting no additional risk to patient safety. Physical therapy is a well-established profession that works collectively with a wide group of clinicians, coaches, trainers, and other community leaders to provide the best care possible for our community members. I urge you to pass House Bill 2684 so we can best serve our community and reduce healthcare costs. Thank you for your consideration.
Turns out we don't have the fiscal on this, so this is going to be carried over as well till Wednesday. Put the second item on Wednesday's agenda for a work session. Inga, anything to say?
I'm fine, Mr. Chair.
And no opposition, right? Yes. Excellent. Okay, any questions?
Yes.
Yes.
Me too. The question I have goes back to the 60-day limit versus what the doctor, the primary care physician, if they refer you, doesn't often cases if the primary physician refer you to a number of sessions that could exceed the 60 days. Isn't that the case?
Yes, that's
so right. That doesn't, so the 60 days doesn't apply if it's referred.
Okay. I think this only applies for patients
for direct
who come directly to the physical therapist.
Right.
Ask a question. When you were talking about direct access, you meant both no need for referral as well as no cap. And you were comparing states that had direct access versus those that didn't, and the cost was actually lower
yes.
for direct access. And that meant no need for a physician referral and no cap.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2684, carry that over to Wednesday for a work session only. And with any hope, get some of these things out of the way. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2104, another one we don't have a fiscal on yet. And we'll call, all right, who's coming up here? It's Conlow, right? Always willing to see you. Steve Conklin. Susan Putnam Hopkins. Is that right? Let's start with you three.
2104. I was outside. Did you call me
first? Why don't you come on? Well, let's see. I only see two of you there, so come on.
2104.
Chair Greenlink.
Will you introduce the bill to us? Let's get it right at least once today.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2104 revises the definition of medical imaging to include medical imaging procedures not related to clinical diagnosis and treatment, prohibits a person from performing medical imaging procedure on another person unless procedure serves a medical purpose and is ordered and interpreted by a licensed physician, nurse practitioner, physician, assistant acting within the scope of licensee's authority. It allows the Board of Medical Imaging to authorize by rule imaging procedures for purposes related to research and education.
That's so clear, I don't know why we even need testimony. But let's do it anyway.
Chair Greenlinken, yeah. Members of the committee, my name is Ed Conlow. I'm the executive director of the Board of Medical Imaging. House Bill 2104 started with the board. The board licenses technologists who practice medical imaging, including radiography, sonography, nuclear medicine, MRI, and radiation therapy. And that's what we mean when we talk about medical imaging. HB 2104 specifies that all medical imaging on humans must serve a medical purpose. HB 2104 specifies in statute that a medical image must be ordered and interpreted by a physician or a recognized mid-level provider. A little history, the board had received over the past year several reports of fetal photoshops offering commercial ultrasound imaging to expectant parents. A couple concerns the board has with that. One is exposure. The current understanding of ultrasound is that it is an invasive procedure which heats human tissue, although the effects are not fully understood at this time. Also, the board is concerned that some parents could make the potentially serious mistake of purchasing a fetal photo and then neglecting to follow through with a medical professional's recommendation to obtain a proper diagnostic ultrasound. In this regard, the board's position that any form of medical imaging offers benefits but also carries risks and should only be utilized when medically appropriate. The board's position is consistent with policy statements of the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the American Institute of Ultrasound Medicine, the American Society of Radiologic Technologists, the Society of Diagnostic Medical Sonography, and we have support from the Oregon Society of Radiologic Technologists as well as the Oregon Nurses Association. The legislation includes a couple of exceptions. One is for mammography, which is governed by the Federal Mammography Quality Standards Act. Also, there is an exception in there for the board to write rules for imaging that is done for bona fide research and educational purposes. And I should point out that we have been working with OHSU, and they've been very helpful in drafting some language for this exemption. Rather than us doing it by rule, they've been working on some statutory language to define that exception, and we appreciate their help.
There are some amendments coming.
There are some amendments coming.
There are some here.
We have two.
We have two.
There's still some.
I had just been told by OHSU that
dash
they
one
had
does
a problem
have one about
with
research.
One of their amendments.
No, there is going to be another amendment coming.
That's correct.
There's going to be another
third
amendment.
Three.
Coming.
Three. Okay.
There is a the dash two amendment is purely corrective in nature. It defines non-ionizing radiation to make it consistent with how Radiation Protection Services uses that terminology. It's purely non-substantive. Also, we strike some extraneous language from some of the definitions. Thank you.
Thank you. The ones and the twos people are okay with, it's the three, or is the three correct or one?
My understanding from speaking just a moment ago with OHSU is there's a slight fix they need to do on the one.
That's what I thought. Okay. So we'll have two and three to take together. Go for it.
Representative Greenlick, members of the committee, my name is Thomas King. I chair the Board of Medical Imaging. And I appreciate Billy, to come before you today. Ed said most of it. The only thing I could say is that the fetal photos, and that there is no regulation about what kind of training they need to have. Anybody off the street currently could buy a machine, and you too can image. There's an issue with the FDA in 2008 put out an avoid fetal ultrasound publication. And they actually urge, along with the American Institute of Ultrasound Medicine, is to practice ALERA principles as low as reasonably achievable to reduce the imaging and the heating. ALERA is also the same principles in ionizing radiation practice to reduce exposure, so we can make sure there's more benefit than risk. Then I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you.
Chair Greenlick and committee, I am Susan Putnam Hopkins. I'm current Oregon Society of Radiologic Technologists president, and I've just come along to stand with the OBI in support of this bill.
Are there questions in this panel? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention that I carried the first bill in the House last year and got royally roasted. And I can't remember what it was, but I had a bunch of words that I could barely pronounce related to your profession.
We always do freshman hazy, is what she's referring to.
He had it this year.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll await the dash three amendments, and we'll be back on this bill. There's still Steve Conklin. Would you like to join us?
Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I'm Steve Conklin from OHSU. I'm here to testify regarding House Bill 2104. First of all, let me be very clear. OHSU absolutely supports the OBMI in its efforts to ensure that medical imaging is used in a safe and effective way. In that regard, OHSU has no objections to the OBMI efforts to limit the use of medical imaging technologies with respect to unlicensed personnel for purely personal and entertainment purposes, such as the keepsake ultrasounds you heard Ed mention a moment ago for expectant parents.
Have you checked with OHSU? I mean, it might be a great fundraising source.
Despite that, we're mindful, however, that The OBMI's, if you will, expansion of their jurisdiction will have some unintended consequences with respect to imaging for research and education purposes. Essentially, there's a redefining of medical imaging. If research imaging, for instance, becomes medical imaging by definition under the House Bill 2104, OHSU and other similarly situated institutions will have to be sure that research imaging has a physician order, or a PA or an NP order, is interpreted by a physician, PA or NP, has a medical purpose, and all those are good things, except with respect when it comes to the research activity and educational activity at OHSU and other institutions. We think it's going to add some, around the interpretation and the order requirements, some undue burdens and costs. It might even prevent or prohibit or limit some of the research activity that goes on right now. So in the Dash 1 amendments, and Chair Greenlick referred to a potential problem with that, which I'll get to in a moment. In the Dash 1 amendments, we've been working with the OBMI for a number of months to try and, if you will, sort of correct and reverse the unintended consequence. What the Dash amendments simply do is add on to an existing statutory amendment. It adds on an exception for imaging for research purposes and imaging for educational purposes. So in existing statutes that has the exceptions for other things like physicians and dentists and imaging students, we want to add on to that by accepting out research and education. I think, important to understand that even with the new exceptions in place for research and education, we still have to be consistent with existing rules under the Oregon Health Authority and the Radiation Protective Services that have a number of requirements around operators, locations, processes that involve ionizing radiation. So the exception under 2104, the OBMI's new rule, won't disturb that existing legislation. In summary, we strongly support what the OBMI is doing. We just want to make sure that we preserve, if you will, the status quo, the existing law and the existing processes for research and education. And that's what the Dash amendments are for. Just before we opened up the session for this, I noticed in the last line of the Dash 1 amendments that there's a phrase for personally identifiable information, and that phrase is supposed to read for protection for research on human subjects. And it's just simply that correction that needs to be made to the Dash 1 amendments. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
The Dash 3s are in process. Is that? The Dash 3s, are they going to be in process? Is somebody working on to make this change to the Dash 1s?
Yes.
They're in process.
No, I just heard about it a moment ago.
So. Okay, well,
we can make it happen.
We need to make sure.
Yeah.
We need to know. Mr. Administrator. Good. Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? Any questions? I think of selling those MRIs. An MRI is certainly worth a lot more than an ultrasound as a commemorative.
We'll make the suggestion.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we're done. It's interesting, the 2093 that was on our agenda is intended to be a simple updating of the vital records stuff, but it ended up getting the archives upset because it changed the length of time. That'll be an interesting hearing when we get to it, because the strange thing is that birth records and death records are protected information.
I understood a big part of that was to bring us into compliance with federal regulations, to model that. Yeah. So if we're coming into compliance, I'm not sure the archivist can win that.
Well, it isn't compliance with a federal statute. It's the vital records people have a standard bill that you're trying to get across the
I probably misunderstood
state. So yeah. They can, in fact, it's to bring it in compliance with a model act. That's what it is, national model act. Okay. I will close the hearing on House Bill 2104. We're going to have a busy agenda on Wednesday, but I think the work sessions we have should be fairly quick. And unless I hear any other need, we're adjourned.